बंदे रूप सनातन रघु जग श्री जीव गोपाल को।
16th chapter discusses the structure of Jambudvipa. Priyavrata has created 7 ditches in the Bhumandala. So that created 7 oceans and 7 islands. And the middlemost island is called Jambudvipa. In the beginning of 16th chapter, Parikshit Maharaj asked Sukadeva Goswami, I want to know the measurements, names and characteristics of the 7 oceans and 7 islands that Priyavrata has created. So how is the Lord's universal form perceived? Universal form is this universe only. So how is it perceived? So then Sukadeva Goswami said, this material world is unlimited and it is not possible for me to explain everything, but I will explain to you the most principal reasons. So Jambudvipa is in the middle of Bhumandala and the width of it is 100,000 yojanas, 1 lakh, and it has 9 varshas, and it is like a whirl in the middle of a lotus flower. So Jambudvipa is surrounded by salt water ocean and it is circular in shape, and in the middle of Jambudvipa there is Ilavrata Varsha. Its shape is like a square, and in the middle of Ilavrata Varsha there is Mount Meru. Now we are seeing the top view of Jambudvipa, and we will see the side view. In the middle of Ilavrata Varsha there is Mount Meru, and the height of Mount Meru is same as the width of Jambudvipa, that is 100,000 yojanas. 1 yojana is 8 miles. And 84,000 miles of this Sumeru mountain is above the ground level, and 16,000 miles is below the ground level. And at the base, this mountain measures 16,000 yojanas, and at the top it is 32,000 yojanas. This is how Mount Sumeru looks like in 3D. So this is Jambudvipa, and it has 9 varshas, and the middle varsha is called Ilavrata Varsha. In the middle of Ilavrata Varsha there is Mount Meru. Other details we will discuss. So on the northern side of Ilavrata Varsha there are 3 mountain ranges, Nila, Shweta and Sringavan. The width of each of these mountain ranges is 2000 yojanas. And these 3 mountain ranges separate 3 varshas, Ramyaka Varsha, Hiranmaya Varsha and Kuru Varsha. Below Ilavrata Varsha there are 3 more mountain ranges, Nishadha, Hemakuta and Himalaya. They are separating Hari Varsha, Kimpurusha Varsha and Bharata Varsha. On the either side of Ilavrata Varsha there are 2 mountain ranges, Malyavan and Gandhamadhana. So they are separating Ilavrata Varsha from Ketumala Varsha and Bhadraswa Varsha. The width of each of these 6 Varshas, Hari Varsha, Kimpurusha, Bharata, Ramyaka, Hiranmaya, Kuru, the width is 9,000 yojanas. So 9,000 yojanas, 9 into 3, 27 here, 9 into 3, 27 more here, total 54. And 2000 yojanas is the width of each of these mountain ranges. Total 6 are there. 6 to the 12. 12 plus 54? 68. 66, correct. 66,000 yojanas are gone. And remaining is 34,000. The 34,000 is the height of Ilavrata Varsha. Because it is square Varsha, the width also is 34,000. So on either side there is Malyavan and Gandhamadhana mountain ranges, each of them is 20,000 yojanas, 2,000 yojanas, 34 plus 2 plus 2, 36,000 yojanas, 38, correct. So 38, 100 minus 38, 62, 62 by 2, 31,000 yojanas. So that is the width of Ketumala Varsha and Bhadraswa Varsha. So this is the structure and the dimensions of Jambudvipa and the 9 varshas and 9 mountain ranges, 8 mountain ranges within this Jambudvipa. And Jambudvipa is surrounded by saltwater ocean. And if you zoom in into Ilavratavarsha, there are many more details. In the middle of Ilavratavarsha, which is square in shape, there is Sumeru Mountain. Around Sumeru Mountain, there are four small mountain ranges: Kumuda, Mandara, Merumandara, Suparshva. On each of those mountain ranges, there is a special tree. On Kumuda Mountain, there is Satavalsha Banyan tree. On Mandara Mountain, there is Devachuta mango tree. On top of Merumandara, there is Jambu tree, rose apple. On top of Suparshva Mountain, there is Kadamba tree. And on each of these mountains, there is always also a special lake and a special garden. So the width of each of these trees is 100 yojanas by 1100 yojanas. 1100 yojanas height, 100 yojanas width. So there are names for each of these lakes also, lakes and gardens also. Apart from that, this mountain, the Sumeru Mountain, is also surrounded by four sets of other mountains, four pairs of mountains, right? So they have their own dimensions that you can see Subodhini also. So mountains on the earth are, they seem so huge, but these universal mountains are much bigger. Prabhupada says we have no opportunity or capability to verify them or disprove them. So better accept the statements of Bhagavatam as it is. That's what he says. So this is how the nine varshas of Jambudvipa look like in 3D. And on top of Mount Sumeru, there are nine abodes of demigods. Manovati, which is Brahma's abode, which is there in the middle. And on eight directions, there are eight abodes: Kuvera, Shiva, Indra, Agni, Yama, Nirti, Varuna and Vayu. And they have their own planets. They will stay somewhere else also, but these are like resort places or extra residential places for them. So Ganga descends on top of this Mount Meru and divides herself into four branches: Alakananda, Chakshu, Bhadra and Sita. And there are many small rivers also that flow from top of Mount Meru. So the descent of Ganga is also described in the next chapter. Ganga is also called Vishnupadi, Jahnavi, Bhagirathi. And Ganga first descended from Kazal Ocean to Dhruvaloka. Then she fell on the planets of seven sages, seven stars. Then from there she came to Moon, then on top of Mount Meru. And from Mount Meru, she divided herself into four branches: Sita, Alakananda, Bhadra and Chakshu. So then she will come from, the river will come from peak of Himalayas and Haridwar and meets the saltwater ocean. So this is how Ganga is divided. She just descends into the middle of Brahmaji's abode Manovati, and four branches will go in four directions. And out of the nine varshas of Jambudvipa, except Bharata Varsha, remaining varshas are called the heavenly varshas. There are three types of svargas. One is Bhauma Svarga, one is actual Svarga, Divya Svarga. Third is the Patala, Bila Svarga. That's there in the subterranean planets. So there the inhabitants are as good as Treta Yuga inhabitants. They live for 10,000 years. They're almost like demigods. Their pregnancy will happen once in a lifetime only. So like that, so many details are given about the opulence of eight heavenly varshas. There are nice gardens filled with seasonal flowers and fruits. There are nice lakes, flowers, birds, and demigods will come and enjoy there. All these details are given. And in each of these nine varshas of Jambudvipa, there are presiding deities who are worshipped by the prominent residents of that places. Lord Shiva is the prominent resident of Ilavrata Varsha. He worships Lord Sankarsana in that Ilavrata Varsha. And in Bhadrasva Varsha, Bhadrasriva worships Hayasirsha. In Ketumala Varsha, Lakshmi worships Hrishikesha or Pradyumna or Kamadeva. In Hari Varsha, Prahalad worships Narasimhadev. In Kimpurusha Varsha, Ram is worshipped by Hanumanji, Sugriva and other inhabitants. In Bharata Varsha, Naradamuni worships Naranarayan Rishi. In Ramyaka Varsha, Manu worships Matsyavatar. In Hiranmaya Varsha, Aryama worships Kurma. And in Uttarakuru Varsha, Mother Earth worships Bor, Varahadev. So these nine sets of prayers are described in 2.5 chapters by Sukadev Goswami. Sankarshana Mantra is Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya Sarvaguna Sankhyayanaya Anantaya Avyaktaya Nama Iti. Bhaje Bhajanya Ranapada Pankajam Bhagasya Krishnasya Paramparayanam Bhakteshwalam Bhavita Bhuta Bhavanam Bhavapahamtva Bhavabhavam Ishwaram. So, Bhaje Bhajanya Aranapada Pankajam. The Lord's lotus feet are worshipable and they always protect the devotees. And they contain all six opulences and Lord is the best and ultimate shelter of everyone. So, like that, the Lord is glorified by various ways by Lord Shiva. And if one takes shelter of Lord Sankarshan, one can control his senses because Lord is so sense-controlled. Even when Nagapatnis are coming and touching his lotus feet, Lord is not agitated. But Nagapatnis became very shyful. That's why Lord is dhira. If anyone wants to control one's senses, they should take shelter of the Supreme Lord. And Lord is the source of creation, maintenance and destruction. And he is the upholder of Bhumandala as Anantasesha. And Lord is the cause of this universe. And from him only Brahmaji comes, and from Brahmaji Rudra comes, and later other demigods and elements and senses manifest. But everything is originating from the Supreme Lord. So like that, Lord Shiva offers prayers. And in Bhadrasva Varsha, Lord Bhadrasriva offers prayers to Hayasirsha. So he says that Lord's Maya bewilders the conditioned souls. We have seen in that verse, Vadanti Vishvam Kavayasmanashwaram Pashyanti Chadhyatma Vido Vipaschitaha. So all those verses we have seen. So basically the prominent theme there is how the Lord is possessing inconceivable potencies, and that those potencies also bewilder the living entities, conditioned souls. So we need to take shelter of the Lord to protect oneself from this Maya. Next, Prahalad Maharaj also offers prayers to Narasimhadev in Hiranmaya, Hari Varsha. So Prahalad says, may all the envious people be satisfied. Let the envious people be pacified by performing devotional service unto Narasimhadev. And if at all we have any attachment, let that attachment be towards devotees. May we not be so absorbed in our materialistic household lives. And devotees are so purifying and their association is so purifying that devotees have all good qualities. Yes, chasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana. So let's take shelter of Narasimhadev's lotus feet. In Ketumala Varsha, Mother Lakshmi offers obeisances to Narayana, Kamadeva. She says that some foolish women worship you for getting a good husband, but actually they don't know that you are their husband. You are their ultimate husband. Material husbands cannot give them any protection. And many people approach me for various benedictions, but actually I'm not pleased with them. Someone who neglects Narayana and worships Lakshmi will not be entertained by Lakshmi only. So whatever material benedictions they are getting, they are actually getting from Durga Devi. Next, Vaivasvata Manu also offers prayers to Matsyavatar. He says, my dear Lord, you are the maintainer, controller of this universe. Other maintainers and controllers are envious of your authority, but we are dependent on you. You are the actual maintainer. You protected me at the time of inundation. Then Aryama worships Hiranmaya Varsha. So many people are obsessed with analyzing your external form and the material elements that you have manifested. But actually you have analyzed them already. In the form of Kapila, you have given a Sankhya philosophy and you have enumerated and analyzed all the material elements in connection with their source. But non-devotee people, they are engrossed in counting these elements and analyzing these elements, but they don't surrender unto you who are the source of all these elements. So after that, Mother Bhumi offers prayers to Varahadev in Uttara Kuru Varsha. She says that all the elements are creations of your material energy. You do not desire creation, maintenance and destruction, but you do them for the conditioned souls. Conditioned souls have a tendency to enjoy separately from you. That's the reason why you create this cosmic manifestation. And at the end of, and you also have lifted me on your tusks, just like an elephant lifts lotus. Next, Hanumanji offers prayers to Lord Ramachandra. He says that Lord Ramachandra is like a touchstone who can verify all good qualities. We have seen the other day in elaborate details. And Lord descended as a human being to teach human beings dharma and prema. Otherwise, why would he suffer in separation from Mother Sita? And there are no material prerequisites that are needed for getting Lord's friendship. Even vanaukasa, bears and monkeys also can become an object of his friendship if they have devotion. So Lord Ram is satisfied with even little service. And he can be perceived only by pure consciousness. Yattad vitu vishuddhanu bhavamatramekam svatejasa dhvasta gunavyavastham pratyak prashantam sudhiyopalambhanam hyanamarupam niraham prapadyi. And in Bharatavarsha, Naranarayan Rishi are worshipped by Naradamani. He says that, my dear Lord, I offer obeisances unto you. And you are unattached pure witness. Asakta vivikta sakshini. Although you perform creation, maintenance and destruction, although you perform so many activities in relationship to this material world, you are not affected by them. You are unattached pure witness. Kartasya sargadishu yona badhyate na hanyate deha gatopi daihikaihi drashturna drugyasya gunair vidushyate tasmai namo sakta vivikta sakshini. So you do things, but you are not entangled by them. You see things, but you are not affected by them. You take bodies, but you don't suffer like other embodied beings. So you are unattached pure witness. So if a devotee studies so many shastras and still he is afraid of death, all his shastric study does not have meaning. So please help us fix our minds upon you. Let us not become fearful of this material existence. So then Sukadeva Goswami also mentions the mountains and rivers that are there in this Bharatavarsha. And he describes about Bharatavarsha residents who follow Varnashrama system. And the demigods glorify the people of Bharatavarsha. They say that Bharatavarshavasis got a birth suitable to worship Lord Mukunda. In the heavenly planets, there is lot of sense gratification. Pramushta, Atisaya, Indriya, Utsavat. Because of that exaggerated, intense, constant sense gratificatory opportunities, we can't focus on the lotus feet of Krishna. And Bharatavarshavasis, they have a combination of both happiness and distress. They are able to take shelter of you. So, and if at all one has to stay at a place, that place has to be surcharged with profuse Krishna Katha and devotee association and festivals. So then only that place is worth living in. He says that Nayatra Vaikuntha Katha Sudhapaga Na Sadhavo Bhagavatas Tadashrayaha Nayatra Yagnesha Makha Mahotsava Suresha Lokopi Navaisa Sivyatam. The place where devotees are not staying, the place where devotees are not discussing Krishna Katha, and the place where Krishna conscious festivals are not conducted, such a place is not worth living. It is better to live in the airtight bag of mother's womb than to come out of that womb and live in a place that does not have access to these three things. So Lord may benedict some worshippers who may approach him with material desires, but he fulfills them in such a way that they don't desire on a material plane again. So, and the demigods say that if we have any pious credits left in our account, bank account, so may we take birth in Bharatvarsha, so that we get an opportunity to worship you. And there are some 8 small islands around Jambudvipa also. So Sukadeva Goswami thus concludes the discussion about Jambudvipa structure. Jambudvipa is the middlemost dvipa of Bhumandala. It has how many varshas? 9 varshas. So what is the width of the Jambudvipa? 100,000 yojanas. In the middle of that, Ilavrata Varsha is there. There is Mount Meru, which is 100,000 yojanas high. So look, there are so many other details. So next, in the 20th chapter, Sukadeva Goswami describes the whole structure of Bhumandala. So far he described only the structure of Jambudvipa. Around Jambudvipa there is saltwater ocean. It's seen, that blue dot. Around that there is Pushkaradvipa. Around that there is sugarcane juice ocean. Around that, these are all like rings. First is circle, Jambudvipa. Around that there are ring-shaped oceans and islands. So then there is liquor ocean around Shalmali Dvipa. Then there is Kusha Dvipa surrounded by clarified butter ocean. There is Krauncha Dvipa surrounded by milk ocean. There is Shaka Dvipa surrounded by yogurt ocean. And there is Pushkara Dvipa. And in the middle of Pushkara Dvipa there is Manasottara mountain range. And even other varshas also, other islands also are having multiple varshas. And they are separated by mountain ranges. You can see Bhagavata Subodhani, page number 125. If you see 125, the middle orange dot is some Mount Meru. Around that is Jambudvipa. And Jambudvipa is surrounded by saltwater ocean. Around that there is Plakshadvipa. Plakshadvipa has 7 varshas separated by 7 mountain ranges, right? You saw that horizontal mountains, that two mountains. So like this is true for all the other varshas also, other dvipas also. So Jambudvipa has 9 varshas, and this dvipa, Pushkaradvipa, has only 2 varshas. So Jambudvipa has 9 varshas. You have seen that structure, and the middle 5 islands have 7 varshas each, separated by mountain ranges. But this Pushkaradvipa has only 2 varshas. They are also ring shaped. And this, see the grey color circle here, that is Manasottara mountain range. That is like a circular mountain range, which is separating this ring shaped Pushkaradvipa into 2 parts, 2 rings. Is clear from the figure now? Anyways, this is only a preview, overview. We'll learn more after 3 months. On top of this Mount Meru, Mount Manasottara, there are 4 demigod abodes: Vibhavari, Devadhama, and Nimlocha, and one more is there, bottom. It's beyond the slide now. So, on top of this Manasottara mountain range, sun moves. Right, sun is moving. So, beyond this Pushkara Dvipa is sweet drinking water ocean. So beyond that is, there is a land, golden land, and above that is called Aloka Varsha. So like that, the radius of this Bhumandala is 2 billion miles. Total diameter is 4 billion miles. So these are some details. If you want the full structure of this, you can see page number 130. This is the whole picture, what we are seeing on the slide. In more accurate details is this picture, page number 130. This is the horizontal structure of universe, basically the structure of Bhumandala. So we have seen the horizontal structure, we will see the vertical structure now. For that you open page number 24. Page number 24, another ring is there that shows the vertical structure of Bhumandala. So this is not so accurate on this slide. So we have improvised this drawing and put it with more accurate details in this, referring to other sources which are beyond Bhagavatam also. So this is Bhumandala. If you are seeing the slide, this is Bhumandala, which seems like a disc. But actually Bhumandala is not flat like 1 rupee coin. It's slightly like a pyramid structure, like this. So, and that is called Bhumandala or Bhuloka, both are same. So above Bhuloka is Bhuvarloka. Bhuvarloka is from Bhumandala surface up to the moon planet, right? That is called Bhuvarloka. So from that moon planet up to Dhruvaloka is called Swarloka. So Bhur, Bhuva, Swaha. When we say three planetary systems, oftentimes it refers to these three. Bhur, Bhuva, Swaha. And above Swarloka is Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapoloka and Satyaloka. These are the seven upper planetary systems. You can see in page number 24. And below Bhumandala, or within the inner depths of Bhumandala, there are seven lower planets. They are Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Mahatala, Rasatala, Patala. So each of them are 10,000 yojanas wide, 10,000 yojanas height, 10,000 yojanas length. So they are like cubes, more or less. So they are there below this Mount Meru. And these are the 14 planetary systems. And this whole earth is covered by different layers of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, etc. So up to this we have seen the static structure. There is vertical structure and horizontal structure. We have not seen any movements of planets. So there are so many luminaries that are moving within this universe. So this movement part I am not very familiar, because to understand the movements of sun and all these planets, we need reference books beyond Bhagavatam also. So those things I would leave for His Grace Bhavaneshwar Prabhu, who did extensive research during his Vidyapeet days also, and after Vidyapeet days also. And he helped me in making many of these things, especially the movements of sun part. So I am not going to cover that. So you can hear when he comes. Yeah. After that there is subterranean planets, the Patala Loka. The descriptions are quite clear there, so we will not go into those details. 24th chapter, you can see the characteristics of each of these planets. Lower planetary systems, Atala, Vitala, Talatala, all are there. Page number 147, you can see all the planetary systems are given there. Lower planetary systems, Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, all that. And Lord Ananta holds these planets on his hoods. So his glories are given in the 25th chapter. And the 26th chapter, last chapter of this canto, describes the hellish planets. Hellish planets are somewhere below the Patal Loka. So they are all described, and there are very graphic details that are given. Sachimukha, for example, somebody neglects his prescribed duties and breaks religious principles despite being born in a responsible family. He will go to a hell where there is Vaitarani river, where there is a moat surrounding hell that is filled with ferocious aquatic animals. He will be thrown into that, and aquatic animals are eating them. And in hell, people are experiencing suffering, almost close to the death also, but they will not die. They will live to experience more and more suffering. Their flesh is directly eaten by different ferocious animals, but he will not die. He will live while experiencing all that pain. So this is very graphic details given in the last chapter. So Tamishra, Andha Tamishra, Raurava, Maharaurava, Kumbhipaka, Kala Sutra, like that there are so many hellish planets. So if someone is eating without feeding other people, he will go to Krimi Bhojana hell. So he will become Bhojana of Krimis. And if someone is eating these animals, cooking and eating animals, so he will be put into Kumbhipaka hell. So he will also be cooked in oil like that. for few hundred years or thousand years, something like that. So like that, there are so many hellish planets. So all these are described. And the purpose of describing this whole structure of the universe is basically a meditation on the external energy of the Lord, how Maya functions. But that kind of knowledge of how external energy of the Lord functions also is important for devotional service, so that we can take necessary care not to get entangled by that Maya. So, and become aware of the Lord's energies. So that's how these discussions are also relevant. So that completes the description of the structure of the universe. This is all called sthanam. Sthanam basically is position, positioning. Positioning different living entities in various geographical locations within this universe according to their specific karmic baggage and what they deserve is called this sthanam. That is described elaborately in the 5th canto, 2nd half. Now we will go to poshanam. Yes, Prabhu.
There is 36 type of hellish planet is there given.
28. Anyways, they are prominent. There are more also.
So, if someone is doing sinful activity, then they are still going to that places. So, after getting the treatment, the suffering there, so their karma will nullify the, or
because after getting, they'll undergo some hellish experience and they will be put in some lower species according to what they deserve.
So there, that impious karma will be nullified, or well, already they are getting punishment. So whatever they have done, vikarma, that will be nullified.
Nullified in the sense like they are getting the reaction for whatever mistakes they have done. Yeah, correct.
And again, they are starting from zero.
Where they start from, we don't know. But definitely their karma is getting low. So, seeing all these, hearing about all these hellish planets, Parikshit Maharaj had a question in the beginning of the 6th canto. He said, my dear Sukadeva Goswami, you spoke about Nivritti Marga in the previous cantos, and you also spoke about the Pravritti Marga, by which one will enjoy or suffer according to his, according to the specific set of modes that he is influenced with. And you also spoke about hellish life and the first Manvantara, Swayambhu Manvantara. And you also spoke about various dynasties of Priyavrata and Uttanapada. And you also mentioned about cosmology. Now I have a question. How may this humanity be saved from entering hellish planets? Prabhupada writes, Vaishnava is Paradukha Dukhi. Thus, although Parikshit Maharaj is going back to Godhead now, he is concerned how people may be protected from entering hellish conditions. So Sukadeva Goswami did not give the answer to Parikshit Maharaj directly. He wanted to test Parikshit Maharaj. He said, if one performs karmakandic atonement for the sins he has committed with his body, mind and words, then he will not go to hell. If the sin is light, he can perform a light atonement. If the sin is very heavy, he should perform a heavy atonement. But atonement is compulsory. Then Parikshit Maharaj said, I don't accept this answer. Because even after performing that atonement, a person may commit again sinful activities. So I don't take it seriously. It is like kunjara shauchavat. It is like elephant bath. So elephant will take bath and throw dust on its body. Similarly, a sinful person may perform atonement and again he may commit sin. Please give me another answer. Then Sukadeva Goswami says that real atonement is knowledge. Because sinful activities are committed due to ignorance. With knowledge, if you can nullify that ignorance, then you don't have to go to hell and suffer for that sins. So, knowledge is the real atonement. And he gives different limbs of this jnana process. Then if you follow all these rules and regulations of jnana process, the knower of dharma is temporarily purified of sins. And it's like Venu Gulmam Ivanala, just like bamboo trees are burnt to ashes in a forest fire. Similarly, one's sinful reactions are also burnt to ashes if he performs with different rules and regulations of the jnana. However, when there are favorable conditions for the bamboos to sprout again that sinful proclivities will come. So that is also not the ultimate solution. Then Sukadeva Goswami gives this ultimate solution. But this jnana is better than karma. Right? At least one has a discrimination between what is good and what is bad, what is right and what is wrong. So jnana is better, but it's not the best. So what is best then? He gives the next answer. Kechit kevalaya bhaktyam vasudeva parayanaha agham dhunvanti karsnena niharamiva bhaskaraha. If one performs exclusive unalloyed devotional service unto the Lord, then all his sinful activities will be vanquished, just like fog cannot stand in front of shining sun. Similarly, there are so many other verses here, we will not quote all this. We discussed in our regular class. So, bhakti is the best atonement. If one renders service to pure devotees, even a sinful man can be purified. But austerities and atonement processes cannot purify such a sinful man. Bhakti is the most auspicious path. And atonements do not lead to purification. They are like liquor pot washing in various rivers. Still the liquor pot cannot be purified. Similarly, atonements cannot purify the sinful proclivities of people. So if one performs bhakti yoga, he need not see Yamadutas even in their dreams. Or even in dreams, if one surrenders unto Krishna and performs bhakti, he need not see Yamadutas. Sakran manaha Krishna padaravindayor niveshitam tad gunaragi yairiha nate yamam pasha bhritascha tad bhatan svapnepi pashyanti hi chirna nishkritaha. He doesn't have to see Yamadutas even in dreams. And as an example, as a case study for this concept, Sukadeva Goswami speaks the episode of Ajamil that describes a conversation between Yamadutas and Vishnudutas. Ajamil is a pure Brahman, but he lost all good qualities because he committed so many sinful activities to maintain his family. Although he's 88 years old, he had 10 sons. He had a very young son named Narayana, and Ajamil enjoyed all the activities of Narayana. When he is eating or sleeping or drinking or chewing or doing whatever activity, he always calls, "Narayana, please come here, do this. Narayana, Narayana," all that. He is constantly associating with that boy, relishing his activities. He could not understand that death was coming closer to him. At the time of death, he began to exclusively think of his son Narayana. Because he has committed sinful activities with his body, mind and words, three Yamadutas came there with twisted faces and fearsome appearances. They were trying to drag Ajamil from his heart. Then Ajamil, in great anxiety, in a very helpless situation, he called out, "Narayana, Narayana, Narayana," because he was so attached to his son Narayana. Then four Vishnudutas came there. They immediately stopped Yamadutas and asked them questions. And when they stopped Yamadutas asked them questions first. "Who are you? Why are you challenging the jurisdiction of Yamaraj? Who is your master? Where did you come from? What is your place? Why are you forbidding us? Your forms appear proper, but why don't you act properly?" So then Vishnudutas asked questions. "You are claiming to be the servants of Yamaraj, but do you know what is dharma? Do you know what is adharma? Do you know what is the process of punishment? Everybody is punishable? Or only few people are punishable? What exactly are your protocols? Please tell us." When Vishnudutas questioned like this, Yamadutas said, Veda pranihito dharma, adharmasya tadviparyaya. Whatever is mentioned in the Vedas is dharma, and whatever is opposite to that is adharma. So, and Vedas emanated from Narayana, Narayana's breathing. So, we have certain protocols for our planetary system, Yamalok. So we consider that the criminal is any embodied human being who is influenced by three modes. So such a human being can potentially perform sinful activities. And that sinful activities are conducted because of ignorance. And what is the evidence? His past, present and future lives. Three phases of life. And the Lord has arranged 12 kinds of witnesses. Sun, moon, directions, demigods and different witnesses are there. Super soul, Yamaraj, wind, day, night. All these witnesses will confirm who is a criminal. And the criminal performs those sinful activities by his gross and subtle bodies. And the judge is the super soul. And the judgment is executed by Yamaraj. And the quantity of the punishment that they will receive is in proportion to the sin that they have performed. And the quality of that punishment is generally cycle of birth and death. Transmigration from one body to another body. So this is the whole protocol system based on which Yamadutas are operating. The solution is holy name, which is the solution presented in the whole episode. Yamadutas do not present this solution. So now after explaining their process of punishment, what is dharma, what is adharma, etc. The Yamadutas describe specifically the case of Ajamil. Ajamil was a pure Brahmana. Ayam hi, Srutta Sampanna. He is very well versed in the Vedic mantras. And he is very respectful to the elders. He conducts sacrifices. And he is intelligent. He is sense controlled. He is mind controlled. So like that, there are so many qualities that are enumerated by Yamadutas. However, one day he went to collect some flowers and wood for a sacrifice, as told by his father. And in the forest, he has seen a Sudra embracing a Sudrani prostitute in public as if it were the right behavior. So when he saw the illicit affair, Ajamil tried to control his mind and senses by recollecting all the Vedic statements and good principles that he has studied so far. But still, because of his mind being completely controlled by Cupid, Mano Madana Vepitam, he could not control himself. So eventually he got attracted to that prostitute and he brought that prostitute into his house and started living with her. And he abandoned his parents and he also abandoned his young, beautiful, chaste wife who is coming from a respectable family, and he started living with this prostitute. And he also spent all his father's money to please her. So he became like a Svairachari. He lived an irresponsible life. He transgressed the Shastras. Like that, such a long time passed in his life. So first he saw an illicit affair. Lust awakened in him. He was illusion. He tried to control his mind by remembering Shastra, but he could not restrain. He was forced by Cupid and he lost all good sense. Just like sun and moon are eclipsed by some grahas. And he thought of bringing her, and he brought her, and he gave up dharma, he embraced adharma, and he tried to please her with so many presentations. So like that, he was victimized by Maya. This is the whole process of Ajamil's fall down. So there are 10 effects of Cupid. Yesterday we have seen 10 stages of effects of Cupid. Cupid first attacks a person by eyes, chakshuraga, attraction through eyes. Next, chittasanga, intense attachment in mind. Next is sankalpa, one will become determined to get that sense object. Fourth is nidracheda, one will lose sleep. Next, tanuta, one will become emaciated. Next, vishaya nivritti, I think, you can see the Sanskrit. Then, one will become disinterested in all external things. Then one will become nirapatrapaha, shameless. Then one will become pramatta, mad. Then one will become stunned and eventually he will meet death. That's how Cupid makes one stupid. That happened in Ajamil's case. Then, these are all different analysis of Ajamil's case. Then Vishnudutas heard this whole story spoken by Yamadutas. Then Vishnudutas wondered, alas, what kind of irreligion is entering the assembly where religion is supposed to be upheld? When an innocent animal is very peacefully taking rest in the lap of his master, and if the master himself is cutting his throat, that is called betrayal of trust. So, and leaders are supposed to set example, because common people follow the leaders. So leaders are supposed to be kind-hearted, and they are supposed to treat their citizens like loving fathers. How could they do like this? So they became very sorry for Yamaraj's jurisdiction and Yamaduta's activity. Then they glorified the process of chanting the holy names. Holy name is the perfect atonement. This person, Ajamil, he chanted in a helpless condition, and by that helpless chanting, he has nullified all the sins he has committed in hundreds of lives, thousands of lives. Janma koti amhasamapi. Not only that, since the point he named his child as Narayana, till date, he has been chanting the name of Narayana while calling his son very affectionately. Thus, he has performed all kinds of atonement. He need not perform any more atonement. And when one chants the holy name of the Lord, he attracts the attention of the Lord. Even he is a sthena, surapa, even if he is a thief or a drunkard or pitru gohanta, even if he is the killer of a cow or a brahmana or a woman, still the Lord becomes kind enough to such a person if he chants the holy name of the Lord. Lord becomes so obliged. He thinks that it is my duty to protect this person because he has taken my holy name. And not only that, this holy name awakens bhakti while the chanting of Vedic mantras and performing various rituals and atonement cannot awaken bhakti. And holy name is the means to completely purify the heart and clean one from all sinful reactions. It's the perfect process of purification. And sanketyam parihasyam va sthobam helanameva va. Even if one is chanting a holy name to indicate some person, or say joke with some person, or in some other manner, if he chants, still the chanting is effective if he does not have any offensive background. And while falling or slipping or while having pain because of fever, patitaha, skhalita, bhagna, in all these cases also, if one performs chanting the holy name, it is effective. Holy name is effective in all accidents and calamities, and it counteracts a whole range of sins, whether heavy sins or light sins. Guru namcha, laghu namcha, guru nicha, laghu nicha. Whole spectrum of sinful activities can be nullified by holy name. And holy name can even uproot the desires, which are the root of sin. And holy name has infallible action, just like dry grass is burnt by fire, and the whole dry pile of dry grass can turn into ashes within no time. Similarly, holy name also can completely nullify one's sinful activities, sinful reactions. And holy name is independent of the chanter's knowledge also. It is effective whether chanted unknowingly or unknowingly, just like a medicine is effective. So then Ajamil heard this whole conversation between Yamadutas and Vishnudutas. He was quite surprised and impressed, and he went into a deep sense of regret. So yesterday we discussed all this. I will not go into so many details. So Ajamil regretted for what he has done, and he felt that I have become a servant of my senses. I did not take care of my old parents. I have degraded my family tradition, family Brahminical tradition, by keeping a prostitute and eating the food cooked by her. The result could have been hell, but this Vishnudutas came and protected me. It's my great fortune. I must have done some little devotional service. So without devotional service, how could I chant at the time of death? Where is me, who is so sinful, and where is the power of holy name? So now I am so determined not to go back to material life, and I will perform devotional service. Like that, he took resolutions. He went to Haridwar, he performed a devotional service, and he meditated on the Lord's form, and eventually he saw the same Vishnudutas, and he went back to Godhead. So, by chanting of the holy name. And Ajamil chanted the holy name without faith. But what will happen if one chants with faith? He chanted while dying, what will happen if one chants while living? He chanted to indicate his son, what will happen if one chants to indicate the Lord? And he is sinful, what will happen if one chants without any sins? Yes, bro.
The Helanam and Parihasyam, how exactly is the mood? Is it still not this?
It's not like with a malicious intent or envious intent. It's like neglectfully chanting and jokingly chanting. Hare Krishna are going, like that he just, in a joking manner he chanted, but it's not to undermine them or disrespect them or like, it's like a jovial way. Right?
Isn't it undermining itself, like say, hey Hare Krishna?
The very fact that it is joking means it's a, even that chanting is also effective. That's what Yama Vishnudattas are saying.
And offense means exactly deliberate looking down, is it? Upon
offense, deliberate looking down, you can say. And mainly, the offense that is specifically mentioned in Ajamil's case is not chanting to nullify one's sinful reactions and not chanting, not committing sinful activities on the strength of the chanting. They have no intention to use the holy name for their personal sense gratification or benefit. Either to protect themselves from sinful reactions,
but
or whatever.
In all the stories, the somewhere or the other, we have in the back of the mind that all the sins will go, chanting will do this. So when we come to...
I think I addressed this earlier also. For example, I think this devotee asked, one devotee asked, and I mentioned this also. It's like general awareness of the glories of the holy name is there. However, when you are...
Deliberate attempt.
For example, you go and meet a friend and the friend might give you a gift.
Yeah,
okay. But you are going to the friend just to meet him, not to take that gift, not with the expectation that he will give me that gift, give me that mobile. Although you are in need of that thing that he is giving, but you are not expecting it from him. So that's the mood that one needs to cultivate. We have discussed it elaborately. So in the third chapter, Parikshit Maharaj asked, what happened to Yamaraj? What was his reaction when his Yamadutas were defeated? It was never heard before. People might have doubts about Yamaraj's jurisdiction. So please clarify this. So Yamadutas approached Yamaraj and questioned him, how many controllers are there? Who cause results? Who give benedictions or who give punishments? We understand that there could be multiple rulers, multiple controllers, but all of them should align with a common set of protocols. They should not contradict each other. So, we thought that you are the supreme judge in this area of who is supposed to be brought to hell and all, but in this area also someone is intruding. These four effulgent personalities came and cut our ropes. So, now your order has been transgressed. If we can't bring Vishnudutas in front of you and if you can't punish them, we are just serving a firefly. We have no power. So, first answer our questions. Like that they just demanded him. And Ajamil, as soon as he chanted Narayana, these four people came and defeated us, chased us away. Then Yamaraj became very happy to hear the name Narayana spoken by Vishnu Yamadutas. And he glorified the Supreme Lord. He said that, my dear Yamadutas, you are thinking that I am the only controller, but there is a controller above me, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu, all these people. So he is above everyone. Just like the entire, he is like the horizontal and vertical threads that are holding a cloth. When there is no horizontal thread and vertical thread, there is no existence for cloth only. But he is like that. But when cloth is there, you don't acknowledge the presence of the horizontal and vertical threads anymore. But without them, they can't stay. Similarly, the Supreme Lord may be invisible, but he is the ultimate controller. He binds everybody through Vedas. Just like a bullock cart, bullocks are bound by this bullock cart driver. Even demigods, rishis and all these people also cannot know him. No one can ascertain his position. and his servants are Vishnudutas, they have qualities almost similar to the Supreme Lord, and their duty is to protect the devotees. And dharma is enacted by the Lord, dharmam to sakshat bhagavat pranitam, and that dharma is known to 12 Mahajans. And I am also one of that Mahajans, he says, Swayambhur Narada Shambhu. Then he glorifies the process of chanting the holy names. So it is pure bhakti. Just see how ajamil is delivered. Even improper chanting is sufficient. And mind absorbed in Vedic rituals and dharma, artha, kama, moksha cannot give him understanding of devotional service as much as chanting can do. And those who chant the holy names of the Lord very fervently, they are beyond my jurisdiction. Te deva siddha parigita pavitra gatha esadhava bhagavato esadhava samadrisha bhagavat prapanna. Tannopasidata harer gadayabhiguptam naisham vayam nachavayah prabhavamadandi. Those who are samadrisha, those who have equanimity, and those who are completely surrendered unto the Lord, and those whose glories are chanted even by great siddhas and rishis also, so such people are beyond my jurisdiction. So who is beyond the jurisdiction of Yamaraj? For sure, he established in this verse. Who comes within the jurisdiction of Yamaraj? For sure, he established in the next verse. That is, Jihvana Vakti Bhagavat Gunanama Dheyam, one who has not chanted the holy name of the Lord even once. Chetaschana Smarati Tat Charanaravindam, one who has not thought about Krishna's lotus feet even once. Krishnayano Namati Yat Chira Ekadapi, one who has not offered obeisances to Krishna even once. Such people you can bring to me, for sure. So, black and white, there is a lot of grey area between. In this grey area, who will go and who will not go, that is subjective. Right? There are so many special cases, star, conditions apply. So who will surely not go? Te deva siddha parigita. Who will surely go? Jihvana vakti bhagavat guna namadhayam. And in the middle people, some people will go, some people may not go. So that is subjective. So but those who never served Vishnu, they can go to heaven, hellish planets. So then he offers a prayer to the Supreme Lord. My dear Lord, please forgive our offense. We have offended you. We tried to arrest your devotee, Ajamil. So please forgive our offense. He did not take any offense that the Lord intruded into his a person much more than what rituals, ordinary rituals can do. And devotees never again take to material activities. So that completes Ajamil episode, which was actually spoken in response to Parikshit's question. It's not coming in the regular flow of the Manvantara or the dynasties that Sukadev Goswami is describing. So it's a special episode which is spoken in response to Parikshit's question of how people may be saved from hellish planets. Right? So now he continues the flow. Where did we break the flow? In the fourth canto, 31st chapter. Daksha was born as the son of Prachetas. Right? So that's where we left. That's where we left Uttanapada's dynasty. So after Uttanapada, Priyavrata took over and his whole dynasty is completed. The discussion is completed. And later we went into Sthanam, the universal geography, in the second half of fifth canto. Then Ajamil episode as an auxiliary episode for it. Now we are continuing from fourth canto, 31st chapter. What happened to Daksha? 6.4 is coming after 4.31 in terms of chronology of the sequence of events. Sequence of storyline, right? Some of these events happened in the middle. Priyavrata incident happened after 4.31, right? But what happened to Daksha, we are continuing in the 6th canto, 4th chapter. So Parikshit Maharaj now revived those topics. He inquired about Visarga. Sukadeva Goswami praised Parikshit Maharaj's inquiry. Oh, you are very good. You are keeping track. What happened? One and a half cantos back also, you still remember. So I will continue, he says. So Prachetas emerged from the water. And Prachetas performed austerities for 10,000 years. They chanted Rudra Gita. And they got the darshan of the Lord. They came out of the water. After they came out of the water, they saw so many trees growing like this, covering, almost touching the sky. So they became very unhappy and angry. They emanated fire from their mouths to burn all these trees. Then Soma, the moon god, appeared. Moon god is considered to be the king of trees. He appeared and he pacified the Prachetas by speaking some good words. This is covered, 6.4. Not yet. You can. The very nice discussion is there. Then Brahmaji also comes, and the son, the daughter of trees, that is Marisha, was given as a wife to Prachetas. This the Lord has already predicted, right? So this Marisha is the daughter of Pramlocha and Kandu. Kandu was doing once he was doing tapasya, and Indra got restless, right? Indra became very upset, and then he had sent one apsarasa named Pramlocha. So Pramlocha distracted Kandu from his austerities, and then they gave birth to, both of them gave birth to Marisha, and she is just an apsara, so she did not claim the child, and he is a sage, he also did not claim the child. Both father and mother went away, and the baby girl is just lying there. So at that time, the moon god came and kept his finger in the mouth of that baby girl, and she was nourished like that. She was brought up as the daughter of trees. Her name is Marisha. And she married all these 10 Prachetas as ordained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one girl marrying multiple men is generally not done, but it can be done when the Supreme Lord says it. So it's a special case. With the Lord's blessings, everything is possible. And Prachetas marry Marisha, and after being pacified by Soma, they take Marisha and go to their kingdom, and they begot Daksha from Marisha, and Daksha creates different types of jivas through his semen and mind. So with his mind, Daksha created some demigods and human beings and birds and beasts and aquatics and so on. And he also created so many sons and daughters who further increased the creation. It's in a generic manner, it's mentioned. Specific details are given later. Before he did all this, he went to Mount Vindhya and performed austerities, right, for a long time. And he offered Hamsa Guhya prayers to the Supreme Lord. So Hamsa Guhya prayers are not the original prayers composed by Daksha. They are some Upanishadic prayers, right? They are standard prayers. Now we may not compose our original prayers. We may recite Kunti's prayer, we may recite Prachita's prayer. So we recite some Shastric prayers, Bhagavatam prayers. Similarly, Daksha recited some Upanishadic prayers. In that prayers, he glorified the Lord as the Supreme Controller. They are little technical prayers also. Couple of those verses are quoted by acharyas also in different purports, different commentaries to establish certain points, establish the tattva of the Lord. So the Lord is omniscient and unlimited, and Lord is supremely pure and realized by expert devotees. He is both personal and impersonal, and he has material forms, which is this universe, and he has spiritual forms also. He is a reservoir of all spiritual potencies, and he is beyond all material faculties, unascertained by the material sound, intelligence, senses and mind. And he is the cause of all causes. So like that, there is so much glorification within these Hamsa Guhya prayers. And finally, after Daksha chanted these Hamsa Guhya prayers for a long time, the Supreme Lord appeared in front of him, along with so many other people. So Daksha's senses were filled with pleasure. So the Lord starts speaking to Daksha. My dear Daksha, your life is successful because of your devotion and austerity. So I am very pleased with your endeavor, because you endeavor to fulfill my desire. What is my desire? My desire is that, my desire means the Lord's desire is that he creates this world, creates this material world, to give an opportunity to the conditioned soul to rectify his mentality and come back to Krishna. to take shelter of Krishna, to exercise his independent desires separate from Krishna and get frustrated in them and somehow take shelter of scriptures and the process of bhakti yoga and come back to Krishna. Another opportunity is given to him. So for that to happen, first the living entities have to be put in different bodies. So they need to develop certain bodies according to their previous deeds. For that, someone has to procreate them. All these living entities, all the conditioned souls, merged within the body of Mahavishnu, Garbhodaksha Vishnu, in the previous day of Brahma, in the previous inhalation of Brahma. In the next creation of Brahma, on the next day, they have to be brought out again. Means all the files, office files are closed, right, put in cupboard and locked inside the room. And the room is also locked outside. And outside the building is locked. And the person left the office and went at the end of the day. Next day morning, he has to come, open the door of the office, open the door of his room, open the door of his locker, and open the file, and open it, or open whatever. And he has to continue the work where he left from previous day. Similarly, all the living entities were absorbed within the body of Garbhodaksha Vishnu. Again, they have to come in action on the next day of Brahma. How they will come in action? For an ordinary employee, he has to open the lock and then open the files, open the computer. But in this creation of Brahmaji, Brahmaji creates some prajapatis, and the prajapatis will procreate. They will create more bodies, and all these souls will take into enter those bodies, right? According to their what is suitable for the according to their past deeds. So thus, those prajapatis who are increasing the population in the universe in the beginning of creation, they are very dear to the Lord. From service perspective, from the perspective of what they are doing, what role they are playing in the universal creation. Not that they are the Supreme Lord is pleased with Daksha as much as he is pleased with Yashodamayi. Yashodamayi is churning butter. Yashodamayi churning butter is different from Daksha's procreating different people. So these are in a different plane. But at least this also, this work, official work also has to be done. So he is doing it. Lord is pleased from that sense. So all these demigods and prajapatis who are increasing the population and benefiting the living entities are incarnations of my qualities. So like that, there are so many points that the Lord speaks to Brahmaji. And he said, I instructed Brahma to perform austerities. So now your duty is accept Asikni. She is the daughter of Panchajani. And marry her and procreate. And your children also will be engaged in sex life, captivated by my Maya, and they will increase the population of the universe. Lord has predicted this. So after that, the Lord disappeared. So Daksha goes and he performs his austerities. After completing this Daksha episode, we'll take. And Daksha completed his austerities and he went and married Asikni, and he begot 10,000 sons. How he managed to beget 10,000 sons, we are speaking of a different, a person who has a different capacity. He is Daksha. He is expert. Expert in what? Expert in procreation. Narada Muni has another capacity. He is Daksha, means he is expert in delivering. One is procreation, one is inspiring renunciation. So Daksha begot 10,000 sons. All of them together are called Hariyashvas. And he ordered them, you also begot children, the way I begot you. So follow your father's order, but before that you need to go and perform some austerities. And this princess and Kshatriya, sons of Kshatriyas, are many times sent to perform austerities in the forest, leaving all the palace comforts before they actually accept the higher responsibilities of taking care of kingdom and citizens and entering household life. They were asked to go and perform some austerities. Why? Because these austerities strengthen the mind, strengthen the body. A king who is sitting on the throne and ruling all these citizens, who is ordering his ministers and soldiers So when a king is sitting in such a position, royal position, if he does not have the background of austerity, he will be captivated by that wealth and respect and worship that he gets. He will become proud, he will become deviated. If he does not have the background of austerity which is performed by himself, he will not be able to understand the difficulties of his own citizens who are undergoing certain troubles. Right? So, voluntarily accepting some inconveniences on the plane of one's own body and mind will strengthen one's body and mind and make him ready not to get distracted even in the midst of opulence. Right? Because he is in the midst of opulence, he could be distracted. But if he has a background of austerity, he will not be distracted so much. And at the end of his household life, at one point, all these kings have to accept vanaprastha order. They have to retire from this active household life and they have to go to forest and perform full-time devotional service. Unless they are trained like that in beginning of life to accept austerity, how can they conveniently leave the kingdom and when the vanaprastha stage comes? So, training in austerity in the beginning of life is extremely important. For example, this king is defeated by an opposite king and he is on the roads. That should not be a devastating experience for him. He should be able to handle it internally. So, how can he handle if he has a background of austerity? So, like that, for various higher purposes and good reasons, many times, or most of the times, or all the time, the kings of Vedic culture always encouraged their sons and descendants to go out and perform austerities. That is the reason why prachetas are also sent out to perform austerities. That austerity will strengthen one's mind and body. So, and allow them not to get unduly pampered by the palace comforts. So when this Hariyashvas went to perform austerities, Narada Muni came there. So Hariyashvas, he observed that these Hariyashvas, young boys, they are very purified. So they took bath in a holy lake and they performed austerities to fulfill their father's desire. They are so pure. Narada Muni thought that why should they be engaged in this procreation business as instructed by their Daksha? So they should not go into that. They are qualified to take to full-time devotional service. They need not go there. So he went there and inspired them to take to renounced order. How? He told an allegorical story that has 10 points. Narada Muni just spoke just 3-4 verses there. He did not speak anything. He did not give them a lecture at all. Because intellectual people don't like to be told. You give them some hints, they'll figure out what they need to do. You don't have to give me so many details. No spoon feeding to an intellectual person. So Narada Muni just spoke few allegorical points. First he said, you have not seen the extremities of earth. What does it mean? This material body is made of earth. So when Narada Muni said that, I am discussing the allegory along with its meaning. When he said that you have not seen the extremities of earth, what does he mean is, you have not seen the extremities of this material body. This body is encasement that will give you engagement in the material life. So just like a bird is captivated within a cage, the living entity is captivated within this body, material body. So, you have not seen the extremities of this earth. So that's one point. Next, there is a kingdom where there is only one male king. He is meaning the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That male king is Krishna. And you have not seen a hole. In the kingdom there is a hole. That hole is Patala. The hole is that kind of hole. If you have gone into that hole, you will never come back. So if you go to Patala, it's very difficult to come out. If you go to Vaikuntha also, it's not possible to come out. Unless you desire so. So, he is speaking about degradation into lower planets and ascending into higher planets. So, next. In that kingdom, there is a prostitute who is constantly changing dresses. That is representing unsteady intelligence. Our unsteady, conditioned soul's unsteady intelligence also keeps on changing forms. Sometimes he has this plan, sometimes he has that plan, all this. And there is a prostitute's husband, that is Jiva, who possesses this material intelligence and unsteady intelligence, the conditioned soul, that is he. And if the husband, if he is a husband of prostitute, he has to cry only. Similarly, if one has unsteady intelligence, he has to cry. He has to suffer in this material world. And there is a river. And that river flows in both directions. Generally, rivers flow in one direction only, but this river flows in both directions. And the current of the river on the shore is high. He is speaking about Maya. Maya flows in two directions. What directions? Birth and death. The current of the river is high, means the pain of birth and pain of death is very high. Right? And in the middle also there is a lot of suffering. Between birth and death also, between creation and destruction also, during the maintenance phase also, there are a lot of troubles and problems. And there is a house made of 25 elements. What is that house? The Supreme Lord, Krishna. He is the source of all the universal ingredients with which this universe is made, composed of. And there is a swan, speaking swan. What is that? That is the scriptures. And there is also a rotating object, a revolving object, which has sharp edges. That is the time factor. And you have not understood the real instruction of your father. He just said that much only. Then they figured out, thinking that actually every living entity will have a father and mother. Human beings also have father and mother. Dogs also have father and mother. So one who gives birth to living entities, bodies to living entities, they are not father and mother. The scriptures are the real father and mother. When Narada Muni said that you have not understood the instructions of your father, he is saying that you have not understood what Shastras are teaching. What they are teaching? Surrender unto Krishna. So like that 10 allegorical points he spoke, Narada Muni. All the Haryashvas individually contemplated on these 10 instructions, 10 allegorical points. Okay. No, for austerities also they shave head. It's not that only after sannyas. They come like that only. So they all became renunciants. Narada Muni is indicating that kima sat karma bhir bhavet. Why one should have to perform these austerities? Asat karmas. So better perform devotional service. So all of them became renunciants, and they went into that direction. Having gone there, they need not come back. That's how Sukadeva Goswami concludes. Right? Patala or Vaikuntha. Wherever you go, it's very difficult to come back like that. Then Daksha lamented. Brahmaji came and pacified him. Relax, don't worry, don't worry. Then he begot 1,000 more sons, Shavalasvas. Daksha is expert in procreating, Narada Muni is expert in delivering. So Prabhupada says, Daksha is not at all happy with what Narada Muni did. This animosity between parents and preachers is existing since time immemorial. Even Narada Muni was condemned. He says, but still we should never give up preaching. So, now Shavalaswar was also purified. Shavalaswar, Narada Muni went. He is the original I-Ways preacher. Narada Muni. So he went there. He told Shavalaswar. The same allegorical story. And at the end he added one more point. Generally, younger brothers follow elder brothers. That's all. They followed. So they also became renunciants. Then Narada Muni leaves and Daksha becomes so angry. Now Narada Muni got another idea. Only such an empowered preacher, Narada Muni, gets this kind of ideas. He said, he thought that I have become the guru of Priyavrat. I delivered him. I met Uttanapada also. I directed Dhruva Maharaj to perform devotional service. And I counseled Prachinabarhi. And his sons Prajedas also, I spoke to them the process of devotional service. And I delivered Haryashvas and Shavalashvas. So why should I leave Daksha? So many people in Swayambhu Manu dynasty I have delivered. Why should I leave Daksha now? Let me go to Daksha. So with that intent he goes to Daksha. And Daksha is now in a renounced spirit. 11,000 sons are gone. Right? They are not behaving according to his expectations. They are on their own. They have left his home. So Daksha must be in a very detached mood now. So let me go and speak to him. So Narada Muni goes. So Daksha first says, you are an asadhu. You are in the garb of a sadhu, but you are an asadhu. I am a sadhu. Anyone who is performing his prescribed duty properly can be called as a sadhu. Although I am living in palace, I am a sadhu, but you are an asadhu, although you have taken up sannyasi dress. Why? Because you have taught bhikshor marga, the path of begging to innocent boys. They are not qualified for it. Prabhupada defeats that. Sometimes parents may accuse, but still preachers will inspire young boys to perform devotional service. Right? And Daksha also said, you are papa, means you are sin personified. Why? Because my sons have not cleared three debts. Debts to forefathers can be cleared by procreating. And debts to demigods can be nullified by sacrifices. And debts to, what is the third one? Sages. Sages. Why? Anyways, the third debt also has to be cleared by these people. But they have not cleared these debts. And you have made them, now they will not render sacrifices, they will not procreate. So they will be indebted to these three parties. So you are papa, you are sin personified. Then Prabhupada quotes in the purport, he says that Daksha does not know this verse. Devarshi bhutapta nidam pitruvanam nakinkaro nayam ranicha rajan. Sarvatmanayaha sharanam sharanyam gato mukundam parihritya kartum. If one completely, exclusively takes shelter of the Mukunda's lotus feet, he is not obliged to anyone. All his debts are cleared. Provided he completely takes shelter, exclusive shelter. If he just leaves family and then spaced out here, then that doesn't mean he will clear all the debts. Right? Gato mukundam parihritya kartum. So, anyways, Vaishnava like Narada Muni can inspire that level of bhakti in Haryashvas and Chavalasvas. So Daksha is wrong. Next, Daksha says, you are niranukrosha, you have no compassion. You are yashoha, you are defaming the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are nirapatrapa, you are shameless. Once you made my sons into renunciants, second set of sons also you have taken and you have come to me now. You are so shameless, he said. Then Prabhupada says, bhakti yogi is callous to all these opinions. Next, you are sauhurdaghanam. You break friendships amongst people. Prabhupada says, devotees are suhurdam sarvabhutanam. Because they are well-wishers of everyone. They don't break relationships. They establish relationships between the conditioned souls and Krishna. And you are not a bhagavata. You create enmity amongst the non-envious. Prabhupada says, devotees don't create enemies. But non-devotees will become inimical towards devotees. That's their problem, not devotees' problem. And knowledge brings detachment, not dress. You have changed your dress and you are calling yourself renunciant, but that doesn't work. Because he says, then Prabhupada says, Narada Muni actually arose in knowledge also in Haryashvas and Chavalasvas. Along with bhakti, jnana and vairagya will come. So Narada Muni gave them bhakti, jnana came and vairagya also came. Next, Daksha's next argument is, experience of misery leads to detachment, not when one's mind is influenced by others. Don't brainwash people, but give them experience of misery. If they become miserable, automatically they will become detached from that sense enjoyment. Because Daksha also knows that if one experiences this material enjoyment, there will be misery eventually. Then one can be renounced. Prabhupada gives this argument. A pregnant woman, while giving birth to a baby, she feels that I should never engage in sex life anymore. This is giving me so much pain. Childbirth is so painful. But after that, she may again engage in sex. So that experience of misery does not lead to the detachment from sense enjoyment. Not necessary. It may happen sometimes, but it is not necessary. So Daksha is mistaken. But by Vaishnava's blessings, everything is possible. So now, you may be forgiven for displeasing me, displeasing an honest Grihavrata, but you cannot be forgiven second time. So now I curse you. You should just travel without any residence. Because Daksha is so attached to his home and home facilities. So he thinks that if one does not have a home, if he is just traveling here and there, then that is a curse. But for Narada Muni, who is a traveling preacher, that's a blessing. It's not a curse. Still, Narada Muni was waiting patiently. Sages, you are correct. Sages undergoing celibacy. Oh, these slides are also there here. So, Daksha, Narada Muni is still waiting. Why he is waiting? Because he thought that, okay, let Daksha speak out. Let Daksha completely release his frustration and anger and anxiety upon me. After he expresses his anger and he shouts at me for a while, even after he curses also, then his anger will cool down. He will cool down. Then I can give him bhakti. With that hope, Narada Muni was staying. See the extent of Narada Muni's compassion. But Daksha, because of his previous offense to Shiva, he could not actually appreciate this attitude of Narada Muni. His anger did not come down, so Narada Muni just left. Right. So although Daksha got the darshan of the Supreme Lord, he did not get prema. He was only thrown into the whirlpool of kama, means material enjoyment and all these external things. And Daksha's that tendency was utilized by the Lord very expertly. So that's the end of fifth chapter. Yes, Prabhu. Now you can ask question. That devotee, Toshinimaya Prabhu.
Prabhuji, we saw in the episode of Ajamila. We should not use chanting either for atoning for our sins.
Yes.
Or with like two attitudes in which Ajamila didn't chant. So generally we see senior devotees or preachers, sometimes they have to accept sins of the people whom they are preaching to. So whether do they accept the sins with understanding that they're going to suffer for it, or with understanding with the fire of their devotional service, the sins will be burnt.
It's a bit
When senior devotees, when they accept, when while preaching, giving
Prabhupada writes, he is quoting the ninth offense. Prabhupada says that it's not proper to give the glories of holy name to an unfaithful person, one who does not have faith. And Prabhupada also says that still preachers, devotees will take that risk and then try to give holy name to as many people as possible. Glories of the holy name and the whole holy name seminar may not be given, but some inspiration to chant the holy names could be given.
Not only telling the glories, but in general while preaching, like going and taking prasad, let's say, or so many conditions are there where a preacher has to accept the sin of, or the some kind of, you know, reactions of his followers.
So I heard one very senior devotee and preacher, when he goes and he takes, prasad from a very new person, he will come and chant extra rounds, 16 rounds. That day 32, not 16. So like that they take some care.
So they do take with the understanding of that they can suffer, no problem, or they take it with the understanding that with the fire of their devotion service, they will burn away all the sins.
So basically, we need to ask those specific devotees only the specific question. The principle is compassion. With compassion, they will try to give Krishna to others.
Because the seventh offense is one should not commit sins on the basis of chanting of the holy name. So even while one could chant to come out of the sins which will come to oneself? That was the question actually.
I didn't get.
Can one chant, like if somebody is taking other sin, so can one chant to nullify the other sins?
No, it's not nullifying his sin. Right? He's just taking more protection. It's not nullifying the sin and all. It's like taking more protection. Just to please them, I have done this. But if it's not favorable for my devotional service, please protect me. That kind of a prayerful thing. They are not committing seventh offense or anything like that. Basically, intent matters. What is the intent? Yes, Prabhu. First.
When Lord appeared to Daksha second time, he tells that you create procreation, means you procreate, and the people whom you are going to procreate also will procreate. Kind of thing is there. Now, Narada Muni has taken over.
11,000 are gone. But he will create 60 daughters now. So, Brahmaji comes and says, what is your problem? When you are creating boys, Narada Muni is making them into renunciants. If you create girls, Narada Muni will not come. So Narada Muni, he created girls and all these daughters were married to different sages and they procreated. That's how the population increased. Right? But another point is, in general, Krishna gives more importance to the desires of his devotees than his own thing. But the Lord very specifically used this word, children. He did not say sons or daughters. He said children. It's quite generic. Lord also took, played safe.
So this system was perfect. It's so perfect that it's like pumping out dirty water and putting it into getting it out and throwing it in the right place or purifying it. It is a perfect machine. So Daksha creates, Narada Muni delivers. Daksha creates, Narada Muni delivers. So actually Daksha is also following what the Lord said and Narada Muni is actually relieving, because finally then Daksha is aligned with the real purpose of the Lord. Daksha just has to give them a chance. Narada Muni is purifying them and sending them.
So we didn't go into the certain details. Maybe we can, after break also, we can say. Here, what Daksha is doing is a perfectly bona fide service.
Correct.
Authorized by Brahma and authorized by Narayana also.
Yeah.
What Narada Muni is also doing also is a perfectly bona fide service.
Correct.
In the third canto, 12th chapter, when Brahmaji created Narada Muni, Brahmaji thought that I have created so many sages who are mainly into mode of passion, mode of ignorance, mode of passion mainly, and they are representing karma, yoga, karma path, jnana path, and they are into so many things. I should create one sage who is exclusively dedicated to distribute bhakti only. For that purpose, Narada Muni is created. Because without bhakti, all the sages which were created by Brahmaji earlier, they are not sufficient. They are experts in karma field and sacrifice field and all other dharma things. Now, problem with Daksha is, we may say that Narada Muni is doing injustice, poor Daksha, he is also doing a bona fide service, how can he go and intrude into someone else's service? Sometimes, it so happens that between two bona fide services also there could be a conflict. This is a bona fide service, that is also a bona fide service. For example, DT dress department may want to offer to Radha Vrindavan Chandra the costliest dress, the best possible materials, the real stones, best embroidery, all that. But they want to do. But accounts department has to cut the budgets. Right? Kitchen department wants to make a wonderful feast every day. The accounts department has to cut the budgets.
Yeah, correct.
So there is a conflict. Exactly opposite.
Yeah.
Now problem here is, they have to come to certain discussion and come to a mutual understanding. If the DT dress costs 4 lakhs, according to their estimate, and if the accounts department say that, okay, 3 lakhs, we can only give 2 lakhs, some negotiation, somewhere they'll settle at 3 lakhs. Okay, 3 lakhs mein das bana denge, like that. But if the accounts department thinks that our service is the best service and they should adjust, they should not speak out. And if the DD department people are, hey, Bhagwan ko, this is a service to the Lord. If the accounts people don't give money to the deities, what will they spend the money to? That is useless, that is useless. If one thinks that his service to Krishna is perfect and other service to Krishna is useless, that is wrong. Narada Muni, he did his service. He did not speak a single word about Daksha. He did not undermine Daksha. Right. He did not ridicule Daksha. And he wanted, he being an honest, genuine well-wisher of Daksha, he went and tried to give him also bhakti. That's what his job profile, his service is to give bhakti to everyone. Whether it is a householder or a renunciant, his service is to give bhakti to everyone. But Daksha thought, out of his ego, pure ego and false pride, he thought that the service that I am doing is the best service, the service that Narada Muni is doing is bogus. In some 10-12 ways, he criticized Narada Muni's service. That attitude is wrong. Daksha service is not wrong. Daksha service of being a householder and procreating is not wrong. But his attitude of offending Narada Muni and minimizing his position, you have changed your dress. Just by changing your dress, you cannot claim yourself a devotee. So like that, these are very unnecessary dialogues from Daksha's part.
See, there also, isn't it so easy to realize that the final goal of even Daksha's duty is finally to deliver only. That's why you have to procreate, because they are coming out and the final goal of every person, so Daksha just has to give them a chance, and the reason is giving them a chance is to go back to Godhead. So it is perfectly aligned. It's like, you know, just bring them out.
Yeah, but Daksha could not get it. But Daksha thought that what I am doing is perfect. What Narada Muni is doing is not perfect.
So even in that, even those times, which is very pure times, even then he could not understand this point, is it? Or is...
See, when one is overwhelmed with pride and false ego, whichever yuga he may be, whichever geographical location he may be, he can be victim.
Otherwise, it's perfectly aligned, right? He's doing his duty, he's doing his duty, and this system...
Prabhupada appreciates Daksha for being a dutiful father.
Yes.
Although his 10,000 sons were converted, he had the very responsibly, he had sent 1,000 more sons to the same place for training. So he is doing his duties very meticulously, but he does not have a broad mind where he did not think that Narada Muni's service is also important. Definitely he has that hurt. If this 11,000 people are there, Daksha could have procreated more, the population could have been increased, all this were there. But Daksha felt that what Narada Muni did is totally wrong, and he chastised Narada Muni, you are Papa, you are Asadhu, you are Nirapatrapa, you are Niranukrosha, you are Yeshoha, Sauhurdaghara. These are all unnecessary ridiculing words, right? So that attitude is offensive in Daksha. But his attitude of procreating, that is fine. And Brahmaji did not chastise Daksha. Brahmaji did not chastise Narada Muni also. He is a superior person. Two subordinates are doing their service properly. Temple president does not chastise accounts department also. He does not chastise DT department also. They are trying to do their best. They are trying to do their best. Right? So, but some balance has to be there. Everyone has to respect each other's service. One should not egoistically and proudly think that my service is best, his service is bad. So he took it very personally. That's the whole point. Thank you.